Hi, Marty Lurie here. Dwayne, Cleveland was in town. Boy, you got a lot of TV time with some of those really nice defensive plays. Boy, you could move there at second, which, of course, I can remember that. But here you're a kid from Wisconsin, Cleveland Indians. What the heck did you think?
Well, I was real happy they showed it because my kids could see what I looked like 40 pounds ago. It's always fun to see the Indians. You know, I have great memories. Anytime you get away from the organization that drafted you, signed you, and, you know, I had my best moments as a player in that uniform, you know, you're not going to forget it. So when we play the Indians, it's a little bit more special. There aren't many guys around that are there now. Mike Segi, the traveling secretary, his first year was my first year, and he's still there. But Bob DiBiasio was here. He was the PR guy when I was there. He's now vice president. I saw him. So there aren't many, but it's still the uniform. And you look at the uniform and you just have fond memories.
What did you think, though? A kid from Wisconsin, Southern Illinois, and now all of a sudden the Cleveland Indians?
Well, I remember, Marty, I got drafted 6 times. And some of those teams that I got drafted by, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the White Sox, I got drafted by the Seattle Pilots. So it really didn't matter. You know, at that particular time, it was the 6th time I'd been drafted. And finally, the scout said to my dad, he said, you know, they're starting to think now that he doesn't want to play. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I just really didn't feel like I was ready. And so it was the Indians. You know, it could have been another team. It really wouldn't have mattered. I was ready to go. And it turned out it was the right team for me because it gave me the opportunity to play 3 years in the minor leagues and then get to the big leagues. And that was really par for the course. If you were going to get there, it usually took maybe 3 or 4 years.
You refer to Reno a lot in your baseball stories. Reno must have had a good moment for you.
Well, Reno was my first professional at-bat, came in a Silver Sox uniform. The first city I ever played in where I cashed a check for playing baseball. It wasn't a big check. In those years, your first year you could only make $500,000 a month. So when you think about it, you get paid twice, $500 a month. You get paid twice a month after taxes. Your check was about $190. And now you're in Reno and you have to pay rent and you're also probably gambling a little bit too. So I do have fond memories. I have fond memories of being out of money and calling my dad and saying, look, I need some cash. And, you know, he was always great. He would politely say, all right, I'll sell a cow. So Reno was great. San Antonio was great. My double-A town in Okie City was really nice. The triple-A team I played for. And then, of course, once you get to the big leagues, in those towns, you know, it's like, well, those were no fun because I'm in the big leagues now.
Did you ever go to the Alamo in San Antonio? Now, there's no Instagram then. So, if you can imagine Instagram in those days, what you would have done?
You know, I'll tell you what I did do, Marty, and we did go to the Alamo. But, look, when you're raised on a farm, it's meat and potatoes. And when I played in San Antonio, it was my first experience with Mexican food. And I didn't know what a jalapeno was. I mean, I didn't know what an avocado was. So, as much as you think that you have all these life lessons on the farm, as far as cuisine, not so much. So not only was it a great year in San Antonio, but I also learned a few things there that I hadn't learned before.
Yeah. I've been in San Antonio. I remember the Alamo and what it looked like and all that. Just as a kid, there's a lot of history there. All right, so now you get up to Cleveland. Had you ever been in Cleveland before?
Never. The only story I knew about Cleveland is when my mom and dad got married, they drove from Racine, Wisconsin to Niagara Falls, which meant you had to drive right through Cleveland. And you had to take... There weren't any freeways then, so it ended up that I lived maybe a half a mile from the intersection where they had to go right by to get to Niagara Falls. So that's really the only thing I knew about about Cleveland, and it was an American League team. I mean, I was raised a National League guy. I didn't know that Lou Boudreau. I always just thought he was a broadcaster for the Cubs. I had no idea that he was one of the all-time great players for the Indians and a Hall of Famer. I had no idea. So I was a little lost when it came to the American League, but you catch up pretty quick.
Yeah, Lou Boudreau, he went to the University of Illinois, an All-American basketball player as well. And how about this? You know, you were a young man once, as we all were. Can you imagine managing a big league team like at 25, 26 years old?
Yeah, they showed us in the old manager's office in Cleveland where he had the bar in his office. And he would open up that bar to the guys that wanted something, right? Now you can't even have a beer in a clubhouse now, but back then he opened up the bar, and those teams were pretty doggone good.
Could you see yourself managing in your 20s? Now, of course, you're not managing. You're a wonderful broadcaster on the way to the Hall of Fame, but could you ever see yourself as a manager when you played, or ever think about it?
I did. I think every guy that plays thinks about being a manager, and then they reach a crossroads of, let's say you play 10 years. After about your fifth year, you end up deciding whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. And I knew that it would be a bad idea if I did it. I would have a hard time pulling people in the office and telling them that they weren't any good. And as a manager, you have to do that. I mean, you have to do it delicately, but you still have to do it. Plus, as an instructor, I mean, I know how to turn a double play. I don't know if I could teach someone how to turn it. I mean, a lot of it's just basic instincts. So it would have been a tough road for me to be a manager or a coach. That's why the broadcasting opportunity came up. And I can't imagine what the heck I'd be doing if it weren't for being a broadcaster. Who knows? I could be a lifelong guy in Double-A. In Elmira somewhere, but the broadcasting thing really saved me.
Yeah, me too. Come on, are you kidding? You know what I did before. You knew me when I was a lawyer. We're doing a show coming up on the weekend, Greatest Games in Giants Franchise History, and I picked out the Kevin Mitchell game where he caught the foul ball barehanded. You were on the air with Hank Greenwald that night, and I heard your call with him.
I was. It was in St. Louis. It was one of those hot nights in St. Louis. And Kevin Mitchell is such an extraordinary athlete. Remember, he was a shortstop when he started out with the Mets. And then, kind of like Pablo, his appetite forced him to change positions. He got bigger. And then he played some third here. And then I remember Willie Mays working with him in Scottsdale in the outfield. But he was an extraordinary athlete. And so there wasn't anything that he would do on the field that would literally surprise you. But catching one barehanded is something that did surprise us. And I don't know, if I remember, I'm not sure Hank saw it right away. And I think I kind of jumped over on him, and I think I said, he caught it barehanded. And then Hank then responded, obviously. But it was very, very cool because he was Kevin Mitchell, and that just added to his legacy.
Yeah, you were very much in the call. Believe me, and it was great. Your voice is different. It's a young voice. You know, you didn't have that deep voice of calling him yet. So that was the beginning of your career.
That was not as much whiskey and cigars and good food, but I don't know what happens to your voice. I don't know if after a while, if you use it so much, it just changes. I do know that if you heard my dad speak, he sounds like. Well, he doesn't sound like me. I sound like him. My brother Glenn sounds like him. So does Jeff. So at some point, maybe they get old and tired and they just gets a little lower. But someone said to me the other day, they watched the game, the 97 game with Brian Johnson, and they said my voice sounded really young.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. That was 97, so I was, you know, almost 40 at the time. So it wasn't that young.
Hey, you had a moment in the stands. We'll let you go. It's fun to catch up with Duane. Always enjoy these conversations. You had a moment in the stands where you brought a ball to a kid. Not a kid. Looked like a guy who muffed one, and he was, believe it or not, wearing your jersey. Come on. How about that?
I didn't. You know, I was on radio, so I saw on the monitor what was going on. He dropped it. everybody booed, and then he stood up and he turned around and he had my jersey on. So it was kind of funny, and then it became personal. It's like, are they going to put this error on my baseball card, for crying out loud? So throughout the game, Jim Lynch and Jeff Kuiper, our director and producer, kept showing the guy, and he was looked like he was bummed out. So I told Dave, I said, Dave, look, if you don't mind doing another half inning of play-by-play, I'm going to go up, and I'm going to surprise the guy, and I'm going to sign a ball, and I'm going to give it to him. And I told Jim, I said, Jim, this is what I'm going to do. If you want to film it, you know, Jim, now for Jim, now this is like doing a movie, right? You got the beginning, you got the end, now we need something in the middle. And he did a great job of showing everybody what was going on. But the only thing I was afraid of is I got halfway from jumping over a row, halfway into that jump, I thought, you know what, if I miss land, I could go over. And then I can see the headline where Indians fan with Kuiper's jersey watches Kuiper go over. And fortunately, I stuck the landing, and it turned out to be a really fun time.
Yeah, don't go over, Roe. We don't do that anymore.
No, I should have known better, but anyway, it worked out.
What did the young man say?
You know what? He didn't say anything. He was flabbergasted. He said, thank you. And I really didn't want to just hang around. I wanted to give him the ball and enjoy the moment and then get out of there. Because if you start hanging around, then it looks like you're really trying to produce something that is unnecessary. So I gained the ball. What I should have done is had a picture taken with him. But those are all things you think about afterward.
All right. Hey, great to catch up with you. I always enjoy these conversations.
All right, Marty. Let's get a streak going, all right? Come on.
All right. That's Dwayne Kuiper. More coming up. KNBR 680, the sports leader.